Good afternoon. The time is 2:00, that is. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, April 3rd. I'm Ray Graff. It's gardening today, and the gang is back in full force. Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery, Fred Breglia from Landis Arboretum, and Bob Graves of Fatigan's Nursery join Dale Isla Riggs, who is now back with us from the Berry Patch. Give us a call, 800-348-2551. If you have a question about your garden, it's about time to make that thing grow. 800-348-2551. You can also email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. Voxpop@wamc.org is the email. The number, 800. You should just write this on your wall. 800-348-2551. That's the number. We have Bob, Fred, Dale Isla, and Greg. Your gardening calls coming up after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. The gardening gang is back today. It's Dale Isla Riggs, owner and operator of the Berry Patch in Steventown, New York. Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. Fred Breglia, who is a director, I believe, of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York, and Bob Graves of Fatigan's Nursery in Latham, New York. They are here to answer your questions. In the warm weather months, they're here twice a month. Every 2 weeks, they show up, and they love it at times, I would imagine. But I never really did ask them. Maybe they hate it. The number here is 800-348-2551. It's gardening today. If you have a question, 800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Hello, gardeners. How are we?
Hello, hello.
Great. Great.
Yeah.
Thanks for having us, Ray.
It's great to have you back.
Little confused. It's 60, 70 degrees, and then it's 40 degrees, and then it's 70 degrees, yeah. And then it's going to be in the 20s again.
It does seem like every other day right now.
It's going up and down, up and down, up and down.
It really is.
Snow to rain to sun to snow to rain.
Yeah. A little lightning in places, too. And yeah. You know, we talked a couple of weeks ago. We had a listener who wrote in and sent a picture of his rhododendron. Mm. And it had sort of brownish. Wilted.
Yep.
And I said, you know, we have that, too, over at my house, which isn't far away. He was in Albany. And they're back, man. It all came right on back.
Right.
So, yeah, they're looking good. Although there was one, my gardener wanted me to ask you one question about that. So a couple of the leaves down very low on this rhododendron are noticeably darker. Is that normal? Like, they're fine. They seem in good shape.
Like a brownish color?
No, darker green.
Oh, a darker green? Yeah. No, that's kind of normal, so, I think.
Especially down low where they get a little less light. Whenever a plant's in a little less light, the chlorophyll gets to be more, a little darker.
Because
it's trying to absorb
energy.
Even
with the winter, I mean, they're protected. Yeah.
They're protected
from
more.
From the sun and the ones up above, which could look a little paler without being brown.
Yeah,
I think that's it.
So that's
everything's
normal.
Coming back now, and it's looking really good.
Wonderful.
Yeah, so that was the soil that your plant was growing in was still frozen somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it was.
So, Greg Ward, you brought High Mowing Organic Seeds Blizzard Snow Pea.
So, every year people say, oh, it's St. Patrick's Day. It's time to plant your peas.
Oh, yeah.
But that's in New Jersey. Mm. That is not. So anyone listening in New Jersey, you could have certainly planted your peas. That's really not in our area, really almost any of the general listening area. You want to wait till about the 1st of April.
Okay.
Here it is. Is it the 3rd today?
3rd.
Yep, it is.
So this would be a good week to do it. Little rain coming, that can be good or make this soil a little clumpy, depends on your type of soil. But you could put them in anytime. Lots of directions on the back there about spacing, about how tall they get. Essentially, soaking them first is really a good idea. So open the package, put it in a little cup of water so that the seeds that are in there go from these dried, wrinkly things to these very soft, plump things.
These are hard. I mean, you could feel them in the bracket.
And then space them out, whatever it says. They always say to space them really close and then thin them. I hate that.
Whoa.
I hate
thinning. Dale Isla's shaking her head, too.
Yeah. Why would you want to do that? Just plant them out. If they're a little close, don't worry about it.
Well, let's think about that for a minute. What could be the folk wisdom involved with that?
Well, if it's a tomato plant, I would say, you don't want those too close. But these things are just going to shoot up and they're going to compete for the space above and the soil below. There's plenty of room.
On some things, you don't get as good germination, so you plant a few more seeds and then you take out the weak ones. But some things like peas, I mean, they're pretty reliable.
They're pretty reliable. Yeah, sometimes seeds are really, really small as well. They're just teeny.
Boy.
And you, like carrots, you just, you know, you sprinkle them down.
Carrots.
And that's a really good one where a perfect example of, you know, you're going to plant more than you need there. And you do want to thin them out so you get a good sized carrot. But pea, it's a large seed.
It's a large seed.
And they're really reliable. So, yeah, I'd say space them the way you want them.
Very cool. The number here is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. So many emails. This one came in yesterday in the middle of the afternoon. This is from Jessica in Schuylerville, New York. Beneficial nematodes. When in zone 5B, do I apply beneficial nematodes? I read that the soil temperature should be 50 to 60 degrees, question mark. When would that be approximately in zone 5B? And if that's in May, isn't that too late and the grubs are post-larval stage? That's from Jessica in Schuylerville.
It's too early.
Okay.
I would say May's probably about right. Now, if we're doing it for grubs, it's difficult to get control with parasitic nematodes because
what's a nematode?
It's an organism.
It's a tiny worm.
Yeah, microscopic. Oh. You would need like microscope to see it.
Goes after lots of different insects, but it's really you got to be really careful using them because the ground's got to stay moist so that the nematode can move. If the ground gets dry, it doesn't work so well. So May's the right time temperature-wise, but you got to be careful because it dries
out.
It's
usually something you're mail ordering. You're getting them in the mail and then planning. And that company should have directions in terms of the timing for whatever zone you're in.
Where do they get the nematodes? Are they from the bottom of the ocean? Are these like sea monkeys? What are these things?
They're growing them. Yeah.
They raise them now. Yeah. I mean, right now in Steventown, New York, the soil temperature at 2 inches is 42.3 degrees.
Okay.
So you can go online to the New York State MesoNet Network, and there's also a site in Voorheesville. So you can kind of look at some of the sites and see what the soil temperatures are and go from there.
So 2 inches is where they're going to measure, or do they have 2 feet and 6 inches and different measurements down?
There are different measurements down, but the nematodes are going to be staying up closer to the surface where the root system of the plants that you're treating is.
They're really good in a garden where you don't want to use any pesticides and you have some. It's a little tough in a lawn because it takes a lot of them if you're trying to control grubs.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of them.
A lot of times if you're going for grubs, we would probably recommend like a milky spore disease, which is a fungus, which wipes out a lot of the Japanese grubs that a lot of people treat for. And that one seems to be...
Only works on Japanese beetle grubs.
But that only works on Japanese beetle
grubs. And
there are
two other types of beetles.
That's right.
And you can't tell what they are unless you look at the hairs on the back end of the beetle, of the grub.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. And the nematodes are really good for some of the strawberry insects, some of the black vine weevil and some things like that.
Really good for black vine weevil. Yes, it is.
Yeah. I'm now fascinated by beneficial nematodes. Are there harmful nematodes?
There are harmful nematodes.
Lots.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they cause a lot.
We probably all have beneficial nematodes with us.
Really? Here in the studio?
I would think so.
I don't think you should refer to Zach the engineer in that fashion. Right? See, he's mad now. This email from Dennis. We have some Rosa rugosa for...
Yeah, very good. Rosa rugosa.
Semi-professional. We have some Rosa rugosa for 30 years, and they have a new problem. We noticed soft, pliable fungus, in quotes, on a main dead-looking branch that appears to have a live twig on the top. We've never had this problem before. This should be a native plant. We normally cut out old parts, contain its spread. Can we lop off the fungus parts? Is it permanently infected and doomed? Can you name the fungus? Oh, good. We're going to play Name That Fungus.
Yeah.
This is from Anonymous, and I won't... Since I said his name was Dennis, I won't say where he lives, even though it's north of here.
Yep.
And,
so
here's a picture. He violated the rules. And there's a picture.
I think I know what it is, but let's see.
There we go.
Let's take a look.
I'll just sit here quietly.
So first, Rosa rugosa is not a native plant. It is a non-native plant.
Okay.
Just, you know, that said, they can naturalize pretty easily. Generally speaking, this looks like little fruiting bodies coming off of the wood. So what that means is the wood's been dead a while.
Yeah. Oh.
And so it sounds like they have not recently done enough renovation work to their Rosa rugosa.
Exactly, though. That's what it is. It's an old dead stem, and that's just a decomposing, a saprophytic type of organism.
They
fungus,
are really tough plants.
It actually looks like a woodier.
They're planted
perhaps.
In parking lots and along.
And cutting them
could
like,
be an old jelly
cutting
fungus
them right
too.
To the ground. Yeah. This month, sometime. So this is what they Dentist Anonymous could do. Taking the whole plant down to a few inches, you'll easily get rid of all the dead wood. You'll get all sorts of new sprouts coming up this spring, and they will bloom better than ever.
Yeah. Okay.
And the good news is that that's not going to hurt the plant. That's
no.
just
it's
again,
a saprophytic,
it's just feeding on old dead stems.
Okay.
So, so not infected, not going to be a problem for growth.
So not to worry, Dentist Anonymous. The number here is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Let's grab one, maybe two more emails before the break, and then we'll do some phones and some more emails. This is from Mark in Albany. A couple months ago, I purchased a seed starting kit to start my onion seeds. I followed the directions, placing 2 to 3 seeds in each pod. I watered the amount stated, placed it under a grow lamp, and in 2 weeks, I had small shoots. A couple weeks later, I found them to be dry. I gave a little water. After that, most died. I only have about 8 shoots. Did I water when I should not have? What did I do wrong? And that's from Mark in Albany.
What do you think? Damping off?
First guess is that he watered too late.
That's what I'm thinking, too. Yep. He said it dried out. Yeah. And when you dry out a seedling.
Almost those you got a mist.
You almost
just
do.
To keep them a little moist.
Yep. But if you can't let it has very little root. So if that dries out, I concur.
And if that seed starting kit had the soil in peat pots really suck the water out of the soil. So it sounds to me, I agree, too dry.
It's definitely something when you're going to start seeds, you want to be able to keep them evenly moist in, for the entire time until you transplant them. And the smaller they are, the more crucial that is.
When we were growing like that, we had a misting system over the bench, and it would come on every so many minutes, depending upon what the product was. And the bench was heated, and you had mist over the
top. A good way to go because you're getting the water on them without really disturbing the root.
Sometimes at home when you're working, it's hard to mist them often enough.
Okay. Yep.
All right, listen, this is a quick question. We'll go for a quick answer, and then we'll take a break. Mona writes in, roses, when do you cut them back, and how far?
Depends on the rose.
Yes, but most
good right now.
Yeah, most roses that are blooming on new wood, which is most of the roses
except
out there
for climbers.
In the world. Except for
climbers.
Can be pruned in April. April is a great month to do it, and I would say, like a lot of things, you want to wait until the weather has warmed up. That's why we choose April, and I think we're there.
All right. How much?
My roses got trimmed by the rabbits, and they're going to come back and look great.
So if it's a if it's a sort of hardy shrub rose, usually in half, whatever that is, if it's 4 feet tall, if it's a sort of hybrid tea or hybrid floribunda, something a little more a smaller overall or sensitive, then you're actually taking it down to maybe a foot or so, or maybe even a little less, depending.
All right. Okay.
You're always opening them up so that there are very few but very nice, healthy, large stems left. All the skinny little stems.
Because they bloom on new growth.
Yeah, all the skinny little stems get removed. You shorten all the bigger, thicker stems to a foot or a little taller.
All right, puts a lot more energy into those bigger stems.
Number here is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. We'll get back to the emails a little bit for now. We'll take a break. We'll be back. Fox Pop, Ray Graff here. The number is 800-348-2551. Gardening today. Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, Bob Graves, and Dale Isla Riggs join us. And let's begin on the phones in Kingston. It's Betty. Hello, Betty. Hello, Betty. That's
human connections.
Okay, Betty, you lost. I'm sorry. Call back. Zach is shaking his head. I don't want to make him mad. Drea and Troy, you're on.
Hi, I have a climbing hydrangea bush that I moved a couple of years ago. And when I moved it, it's against a brick wall. When I moved it, I had to pull all the little tendrils off of the brick wall. It really likes where it's living now. It's also against a brick wall, but it has never reattached to the wall. So I'm propping it up. I'm propping up the trellis so that the whole thing doesn't just topple right over. Mm. Will a climbing hydrangea reattach itself to a wall after it's been pulled off?
It will. It what happens is it's established on a wall and it's been there for a while, and then when it's pulled off, all those tendrils came off with it. And climbing hydrangea is just not a super aggressive plant. It's a moderately grow. I call it a moderate grower. So it's taking its time, and you might be able to help it establish by creatively using. It's almost more of an engineering problem now than it is a horticultural problem. Can you use string and sort of help it stay up and help it stay in one area for a while so that those tendrils can reattach? And that's kind of what you need to kind of do to help it reestablish.
Yeah, it definitely should be touching
the
wall.
I tried screwing it into the brick wall, and the branches were so tough that they actually pulled the screws out of the brick wall. I have it propped. I have the trellis that it's entangled in propped up so that it's close, so it's kind of leaning against the brick wall.
Yeah.
But it's just taking a very long time to reattach. I was wondering if I was doomed to never have it reattached.
The wood is touching the stone wall, right? That would be, of course, mm-hmm. necessary. And then it's probably going to happen first where all the new growth is.
Yep.
So you could consider doing some pruning to recreate some new growth.
Back.
Maybe not everywhere. You wouldn't want to necessarily shorten it, but thin it a little bit so you get some new growth happening in the middle.
Yep, it will. Mm-hmm. It'll take some time, but it will.
Yeah. All right.
Okay, super. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot for the call. Now, listen, folks, Betty in Kingston is back on the line. You think Betty will have learned her lesson here? Let's see. Betty, is it going to be nice and quiet when we go to you? Hello, Betty. Are you there?
No idea.
Betty. What's going on? Betty, what's happening? You're verklempt. All right. Well, sorry, Zach. Okay. All right, buddy. Idle it back a little bit. Diane in South Hadley, Massachusetts, you're on.
Yes, hi. We have rhododendrons in our backyard, and when they first started wilting and not coming back after the cold, my husband went and watered them because he thought they didn't have enough water. Some of them have come back, but some of them are still wilted, and some of them have yellow and brown leaves. What should we do?
Okay.
How old are they? Are they, they've been there a while?
Yes, they've been there a while.
And they looked pretty good last year? They looked good last year?
Yes, they did.
Yep. So probably they'll come back.
I would just wait. Yep. It's a little early to actually do anything drastic.
Yep.
And see what happens by the end of May. It will either look pretty good and re-leaf after the flowers, if any flower buds open, and then leaves will come. Or you'll have a few dead branches, and you'll want to prune those out.
The rhododendrons, the insects that affect those and the diseases that affect them are not active over the winter. So if it looked good last year, as Greg said, it's probably going to come back because there's nothing that really changed over the course of the winter. When they start to deteriorate in June or July, then we start looking for other things, rhododendron borer or phytophthora disease. But I think you're right. Just wait and see.
Yeah, it's just one of those things you don't really want to wait sometimes, but the best choice in these cases are most of them come back, especially if it went into the fall looking good. Yeah. It's just time.
The winter, as we've been talking, can damage the evergreen leaves. That's okay. And so it can have a look of distress in terms of the foliage right now, and even some that maybe don't perk up as much. But what you want to see is a bunch of new leaves this year, and that's going to happen at the end of May.
Okay, at the end of May. And so what about the yellow and brown leaves? Leave them alone?
Yep,
and they'll fall off by themselves?
I would leave them alone. They'll either fall off or they'll sort of regenerate some chlorophyll and turn more green.
Usually on a rhodie, if it turns yellow, it's just an older leaf and it's going to come off.
Yep. Again, not too concerned. And that's probably on the older leaves too, right? That yellowing?
Diane?
I'm not really sure. Yeah, I think so. It's on, yeah, because it's the bigger one of all of them. Yeah.
Yep. So. Yeah.
All right. Well, Diane, thanks a lot for the call. It's Gardening Today with Fred Breglia, Dale Isla Riggs, Bob Graves, and Greg Ward. Email is voxpop@wamc.org, and the number once again is 800-348-2551. Ryan wrote in before the show in Mount Tremper, I recently bought my first home. Well, congratulations. And now I'm seeing most of my wooded five-acre property is full of Barberry and Oriental Bittersweet. What's the best way to get rid of these two? Is there anything native I can plant to compete with them?
So, you know,
why are you laughing?
It's a battle.
It's a battle.
It's a battle. I mean, those plants are pretty... They're persistent, especially the bittersweet. But, you know, it's really a matter of just cutting at the right time and being persistent. So the when's the right time? It's coming up real soon. You want to let the energy of the plant get used up to put on a set of new leaves. That's going to come up soon. As soon as it does that, come in and cut that plant right back to the ground. And then it's going to want to send up new sprouts, most likely. And you watch for them and let them send up some new sprouts. And then cut them again, and you might have to cut it even a third time. But you do that, you're running that plant out of energy, and you will win the battle. It just, you know, it could take some persistence.
Those are invasive plants that we used to sell, yep. But in New York State in particular now, it's not legal to sell some of those.
Yep.
And there are companies that focus on removing invasive species as a business. So they could, I don't know where Mount Tremper is, but you could look into that. Certainly, there's probably someone in the region that does offer that. In Massachusetts, there are some, I think they're state grants. I was going to say they might be federal, which means they might not exist anymore. But to partially pay for the removal of invasive species in your woodlands.
Yeah.
And the other thing is if they're fairly small, I mean, we have Oriental Bittersweet in our woods, and just every time we go up in the woods, we take pruners and a glove, and they're actually, in the woods especially, they're quite easy to just pull out because the roots have not gone very deep. They tend to just be under the leaves. So if they're fairly small, just pull them out and make sure the roots are off the ground and dry out and they'll die.
Yep. And the other part of the question was, can you plant something to try to outcompete them? And the reason why they're invasive is they are better at outcompeting a lot of natives. So you're not going to win this battle by trying to get something to outgrow it. It's a matter of you just getting in there and cutting them down. And like I said, you know, you start in the spring after it leaves out and then just keep right on going. And, you know, it doesn't hurt if you're walking in the woods, bring a pair of pruners, like Delilah said, just, you know, keep after it. You will reduce it. Will you ever completely get rid of it? Probably not, but if you can reduce you're going to be in a lot better
shape.
It's
also a little bit like you know how when you paint your house, you go, oh my gosh, I got to go all the way around the house. I mean, this is going to be a big job.
Right.
Just take one section at a time. Don't have to do the whole section in 1 year. Just take one section, work hard at it, and keep going.
I would just throw some nematodes down, you know?
Wouldn't help.
What?
It won't help.
Come on, Bob. Work with me here. Second question from Ryan. Do you have any recommendation for fencing materials for a veggie garden in the woods? I'd prefer not to use plastic. And as a sub-question, any Ulster County-specific ideas for where I can get? Well, I don't want you to specifically say places you can get fencing materials, folks. So we'll just leave it at that. Any recommendations for fencing materials for a veggie garden in the woods?
Depends on, number one, how do you have a veggie garden in the woods? I'm not sure. It's kind of shady for veggies.
Yeah, oh, that's true.
But, you know, if it's rabbits, you use a rabbit fencing, which is like chicken wire, only the spaces are smaller down towards the bottom.
Yeah.
But if it's deer, you know, you got to go to 7 foot tall wire or some sort.
Yeah, so it depends on what kind of critters you're trying to keep out. Fencing, we do recommend as the general probably best way to keep your garden pest-free or at least reduce the pests. But it does, you know, like at our house, we don't really have a deer issue, so we don't have to worry about going out.
You really don't, huh?
No, it's just there's not...
Really?
There's
do you
not
want some?
Not really, no.
Because I'll send some over.
But what we do have is rabbits. You know, they come in. And over the years, I have tried some plastic fencing that we have that was like old stuff that we were throwing away at the Arboretum. It was old deer fencing. And instead of being 7 feet tall, I cut it down to like 4 because I had like 4 feet of good stuff.
Yeah.
And they clipped right through it.
They cut right through it.
They cut right through it.
For some reason, rabbits like to chew on plastic.
They do. They went right through it. They got in.
Like
they did the same thing at the Arboretum.
You got drip irrigation and you got the little spaghettis coming off. They'll just go through and bite them for the fun of it.
Yep. So
they
we ended
love
up going
biting what cords like When I first met my gardener years ago, she had a pet bunny, and it would bite through lamp cords and everything
else. It does seem to be the case. I didn't realize how prolific they could bite through and how persistent they would do
they,
that.
They only bite through a lamp cord one time.
Right, but fencing, man. Well, that's true.
But, fried bunny.
We replaced it all with metal fencing, long story short, and we never had another problem. We also buried that fence down, so when you do this, if you're going to put a fence down, try to go down 8 inches deep when you install it.
And the reason is woodchucks.
Woodchucks.
Yep. Right. Yep.
So we used electric fence for woodchucks.
That'll do it.
And boy, did that work.
Really?
And electric fence works well for deer, and it does not have to be 7 feet tall.
Nope.
Yes, it does not. We use it for the horses.
In fact, some people use
it one time, they don't go back.
Yep. Sometimes they'll even use it for fencing your honey to keep away bears.
Yeah.
Yep. Really?
And it works for that as well.
You'd have to up the amperage for that, right?
You might.
Oh,
I mean, it's for a cow, though. I mean,
it's like 30,000
volts.
Yeah,
it's for a cow.
But it's not the volts that'll kill you. It's the amps.
Well, I know, but volts will keep you away.
We've got to go back to the phones here in a moment. But Matt writes in, when would be a good time for me to take my overcrowded calla lily bulbs from last year's pots so I can replant them in several less crowded areas? Or crowded ones, I should say.
So if he's wintering them, of course, inside, these are tropical plants, in pots, and they're pot bound, then he could be dividing them right now.
That's it.
I think that's what he was asking.
That was the most concise answer we've ever had here on the program. Let's go to the phones while we're ahead.
Two word answer. Right,
Westfield
now.
Massachusetts is the place. Clark, you're on.
Hey, how you doing? So I have a question about some arborvitae next to my house. They've gotten huge. They're probably 20 feet tall and they're just so wide. So I have a two-part question. How aggressively can I top them off? How aggressively can I trim them back? And second part, when should I do that?
Yeah, so you could definitely, reduce them by probably 30% in one season. So some evergreens don't respond well to being reduced or pruning. And arborvitae is not one of them. That responds real well. So, just make sure you're, making good pruning cuts. Ideally, you're cutting back to some intersecting branch instead of just, haphazardly cutting it and leaving a stalk. And that way that intersecting branch could grow out and over the cut and begin to seal off those wounds. Otherwise, haphazardly, when sort of tree topping, it doesn't leave a good spot for the plant to seal, and then rot can get in. So, cut back to a corresponding branch. And 30%.
So it will grow back if I top it off. Oh, yeah. It will start to grow up again.
It definitely will.
Stay there.
Mm-hmm. It'll take a while because they're 20 feet tall, and you're going to take 5 feet or 6 feet off of them if you do that.
Yep.
There'll be a big open gap up there that you might not actually see when you're standing on the ground. Yeah. But eventually that will fill in.
Yeah. Yep. And if you see, intersecting branches, cut back to them. And it kind of, it's better for the plant, better for the shrub. But also it'll look better, too. You, you're kind of hiding some of those cuts with, branches that have foliage on them. But it will regenerate and you'll
be
back.
30%.
Yep. And you might get a wider plant. Go ahead.
Oh, it's very wide. When's the best time to do this? Is it too early?
No, you could do it now. You could. You could also wait and let some of that growth come out in the spring and then cut them. But in this case, I think I would actually advocate taking them now so that way you get new growth up there for the spring and it covers those injuries over.
Yeah, all right. Clark, thanks a lot. Email from Brad. Now, we were talking about the person who has the 5 acres and has Oriental Bittersweet. Brad writes, goats are supposed to like that. Is that true?
I have heard of that.
Goats will eat a lot of stuff. They're browsers.
Yep.
They're not grazers.
They won't skip over the native things that are in there.
That's what I was going to say.
They'll eat everything.
Eat the understory. Yeah.
Yep. So, but they're going to eat a lot of things that you don't want them to eat.
They don't like barberry quite as much.
Probably not.
Pretty hard to eat that.
So Mandy writes in, we have a rabbit. We call all power cords spicy hay. Our bunny has destroyed at least 30 cords and is perfectly fine.
There you go.
There you go.
Well,
you learn something new every day.
So apparently he can eat more than one power cord, Bob.
I guess.
Yeah, how about that?
You got a pet bunny in the house. Get your cords up high.
Who knew? Katie writes in, hey, can you ask the experts what's with the vine that's choking our roadside trees? Seems so pervasive last few years. We don't know where Katie is, but
that's Oriental Bittersweet.
You're kidding me.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Goats like that. That's what I've heard.
You got to get some big goats, though.
Huge, just massive goats. Yeah. You guys ever see Night of the Lepus, by the way?
No.
It's about this infestation of giant rabbits from the 70s. You don't remember this movie?
No, I'm going to add it to my view,
oh,
my
gosh.
View list.
Oh,
though,
you
now.
Must see it. It's spectacularly bad. I mean, you, Zach, let's take a break. 800, here comes the stirring theme from Night of the Lepus. 800, no, it's not, actually. It's Ronnie Earl, some blues. 800-348-2551. Ronnie Earl, lunch at R&M's here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the number. And once again, thanks to all of you who came Monday to the Terrapin Restaurant for the live baking demonstration with Chef Gail Sokol. It was an interesting, it was interesting for me, but you guys were great and the crowd was awesome and Terrapin Restaurant is awesome. And if there's anything salvageable, we'll put it on the radio at some point. I'm starting to edit the show now. Gail Sokol said, you know, it was an interesting because she said, I'm a neat freak and you, Ray, are a slob, which I thought was, accurate, but she didn't need to email me that. Let's go to Wallkill. Sharon, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. I was wondering about, hello?
Hello.
Hiya.
Hi.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi.
Welcome.
Hi. Thank you. We're replanting some things along the front of our house. The front of the house faces north. We're in a bit of a valley. I'd like some evergreens, but is boxwood my only choice?
No, boxwood's a good choice, but yep. Rhododendrons, some azaleas, Pierre Japonica, mountain laurel, or a bunch of things that are evergreen that would grow in the shade like that.
Oh, Mount Laurel, that's a good one. We do have deer issues.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, well, we're going to need to fence them or spray some repellent because they don't eat all rhododendrons, but they eat some rhododendrons.
They took care of ours last year. We had no buds at all.
Pieris is a little more deer resistant.
Pieris, Pieris in a spot where they don't eat it. Azaleas, they don't usually touch as much.
No, especially if they're deciduous azaleas.
Especially
if they're
deciduous.
Yeah, those
are going to,
but they'll still browse the buds.
Yeah.
And they don't do as well in the shade.
Yeah.
That stuff works, though.
I'm
that spray. Go ahead, Sharon.
The Mount Laurel sounds very interesting to me, but where would I purchase that?
Most garden centers around here.
Yeah, most garden centers. It's pretty
not,
common.
It's not something that we sold much 30 or 40 years ago because it was too cold.
Yeah.
But the climate has changed.
Uh-huh. It is, of all the ones that we've mentioned, it is the most finicky in terms of soil pH. So just understanding what your soil pH is first, maybe before you do that.
Yeah.
The other rhododendron that works pretty well are those little leafed rhododendrons also.
PJM or Paul J. Metzer or something like that.
But I'm not trying to discourage you. Certainly give it a try.
Yeah. And look at cultivars, because there's a lot of different cultivars of these plants. So boxwood's not created equal. There's a lot of different boxwood cultivars. So you kind of say, how big do I want it to get? And, often that will determine which variety, because the one thing you don't want to do, and I see this happen a lot, is people plant landscape plants. Boxwood doesn't get that big. Well, boxwood can get large. So you make sure you get the right variety so that you're not having to go back out there, and prune all the time. If you pick the right variety in the right spot, you can get away with almost very little pruning.
For the mountain laurel,
go ahead.
I was just going to ask Greg what would be the ideal pH that she should strive for.
Certainly something acidic, low sixes would be okay.
Even into the fives.
Five and a half. Right.
But if it was lower, that would be great.
Five
would be ideal.
They're also kind of fussy in terms of sun. They'd like to have morning sun. They don't want to have a hot afternoon. Of course, if they're in the shade, that should be okay.
They also like filtered light, so that's another condition. If you get filtered light, it's never any real direct sun, but you're getting light. A lot of times there's shade's not created equal either. There's dense shade, and then there's places that only get sun in the morning.
I'm sure, Greg, you noticed this, but along the Mass Pike, they grow on one side of the road.
Yeah.
They don't grow on the other side.
Because of the exposure.
Interesting.
So have we talked you out of Mountain Laurel yet?
No, I'm very adventuresome. I'm willing to give it a try.
I love it.
Just don't go all with one thing. Try a mixture of things.
Exactly.
Go ahead, Sharon.
That was my last question. If I would like to go with a mixture of things, and would the pH be in the same general area for all of what we've talked about?
Yes.
It would be really similar to most of them, and they'd be adaptable. Even boxwood that can tolerate a little bit more alkaline
can
actually go the other way.
It'll take it.
Take it. Right. It's very tolerant. Yep. And they usually say about 5% of any one particular species in any one planting zone and planting spot. So if I was going to plant, a bunch of plants in my foundation, 5% total volume of any one particular species. So you want to mix it up a lot, and that's going to give you a better interest, a better look. And then if a plant got a problem, it's only going to kill 5%.
By the way, we have a hellebore. I think, Greg, you brought hellebore one time last year.
Yeah.
It's blooming already.
They
have flowers already. It's
supposed
amazing.
To flower right now.
That's incredible. This email from James. 2 years ago, for quite a high cost, I planted 4 arborvitaes in my front yard. The first winter, wrapped in burlap, they did quite well. They emerged from their winter coats looking fantastic. Last fall, I again wrapped the 4 trees in burlap, fertilized them a little bit before the onset of winter. This spring, unwrapping the trees, I noticed substantial browning of the needles. One of the 4 plants may not make it. I'm wondering what I did wrong. Was it the windy winter? Was it especially bad for ornamental evergreens, or did I do something wrong?
It can be a couple of things when they look at brown this time of year. It can certainly be the winter and the weather and all the wind burning it. There's also an insect called an arborvitae leaf miner that the damage shows up in the spring and it looks just like winter kill.
It does.
So you want to get a piece of that to somebody who could identify that for you because you can't control that. If it is arborvitae,
you can't control it.
You can.
Nematodes, I'm guessing.
Not nematodes. No. Not going to help.
That's
with
my
that
word
either.
Of the day today.
Yep.
The other thing to consider is that we had a serious drought last fall.
That's what I was going to say.
Last summer and fall.
Oh.
And if, so that they went into winter a little stressed, and so all the damage you're seeing could be from last fall, especially if they've only been in the ground for a year prior to that. That would have been.
It was extremely windy this winter. Extremely.
Sure was.
Windy.
Well,
if it is a leaf miner, you can look, under a hand lens, you'd need a magnifying glass for this, but you could actually look at the tips of the foliage that doesn't look good to brown or dead foliage, and at the ends, there would actually be a hole where the leaf miner exited.
I've actually been able to pull them apart and find the worm.
You could actually find
the
them.
Inside.
Oh,
it is.
Like tequila.
Yep.
Yes.
I wouldn't know.
All right. I bet you would.
Just lastly, I wouldn't do anything to those plants. I would take the burlap off
and wait
till at least the end of May. It'll either be completely brown and you'll know it's dead, or they'll start to green up.
All right. One more email and then back to the phones. This one is from the great Deanna Fox, who was a Food Friday favorite for years. She's now self-imposed exile from the show. And but I'm trying to make nice, and I'll read her question on the air. Question about wild parsnip. I've noticed a big uptick in wild parsnip on my property, saith Deanna, especially along the roadside and ditches that I weed whack regularly. Last year, I failed to properly cover my arms when I was cutting it down, ended up with blisters and scars covering my arms that were, let's say, aesthetically unpleasant. Is there a good way to eradicate it from my property beyond cutting it? And that's Deanna.
Are we sure that's what it is?
Yeah.
It sounds like it is. That's classic symptoms. If you get that juice on you and you're in the sun and you don't wash it off, you're going to it's photosensitive and you're going
to
blister.
It's not big enough to be the
giant hogweed.
No. Yeah.
But it's very you can definitely get some burning from it.
I've burned up before with it.
So, what are the various ways to do that? Don't wait until it's 3 feet tall or 2 feet tall. Cut it early, but maybe you can, that way it's not splashing everywhere. Certainly suit up. I would think mowing, just gloves and long sleeves, tape.
Take a shower right after you get done with it, too, because if it gets on you, you wash it off. It isn't instant. It isn't like you get it on you and you're going to blister.
So what is it?
It's their juice, and when it hits with the sun, it creates a burn.
Now, parsnip, I thought that was a vegetable, no?
That is, but this is a poison parsnip, not related. This is actually more similar to giant hogweed.
Very bad stuff.
Very bad stuff. Okay. But it actually creates the exact same type of photo reaction, and it needs to get the sunlight to react with it. Mm-hmm. So if you get it off, I mean, I've been out, and I've got the juice all over me, got in, take a shower, and I've never got any. But if I leave it on, it's going to get you.
All right, let's go back to the phones here. It's Gardening Today on Vox Pop. Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, and Dale Isla Riggs. 800-348-2551. That's the number. Let's go to Leverett, Massachusetts. Hello, Marilyn. You're up.
Hi, Ray, and hello, guests. So I have questions about pests. One is about squash bugs. Last year and the year before, just the squash was just covered with the bugs, with the eggs. And I was reading, I was trying to do some research, and it says companion plants can help. We rotate from one bed to another. So just wondering what your thoughts are.
Really, the best thing for squash vine borer is to exclude it. So use some row cover or some insect exclusion netting, because they're going to find your plants one way or another. So,
okay. You know, so I don't need to take all the soil out of the bed and put new soil in or anything like that.
Nope.
And what kind of cover crop?
So this is just a row cover. It's like a fabric material, or you can use insect exclusion netting, which tends to have a little bit larger mesh. You just need to, most of the insect exclusion nettings right now are a fine enough mesh that insects are not going to get through. So, and the row cover will make it a little warmer, so the squash matures more quickly.
Splendid.
And okay, so this row cover or the exclusion netting. Oh, that's so great. Now, my other question is, you mentioned electric fence. So we have 4 pear trees, 2 Asian, and I think 2 Bartlett, and the bear came and knocked down the 3-foot wire cage around it. And we don't know what to do with the pear trees. Should we cut them down? One pear tree has just, you know, branches on one side. Another one, I'm looking out the window, has the top off, and another one just looks very pitiful.
So they can be pruned to you know, fix that structure. So that part can be fixed. No problem trying to fix the structure on a tree. Pruning can fix that, but the bears are going to keep coming back. So, you know, we talked about this before, but electric fencing, it's pretty inexpensive.
Easy to install. If you drive by an orchard in New York State, the fencing, it looks like a prison.
Yep.
They got 7-8 foot tall fencing all the way around the orchard.
Yeah. Well, that's what my husband was thinking, to do, you know, electric fence around there.
Yep.
It's not that hard.
We can prune them then, just to kind of, not down to the ground, but just prune the different sides, the different branches.
If you have like less branches on one side, so you kind of head some back on the other side, and you know that it's going, and don't prune on the side where the less branches are, and you know that's going to encourage growth. So over a few seasons, by cutting things back on one side or reducing the top here, it's going to push growth elsewhere. And what you're trying to do is just push growth to where you want it, and take it away where it's too long. And you know this time of year, even if you notice branches that are going to, you know, hey, these are really way too long. If you went out there now and shorten them, doesn't mean take them away, just reduce them, cut back to another intersecting branch. Now when the spring growth comes, you got a better shot at not making the branches that you don't want longer, and more of a shot at making these places that don't have a lot of branches or short branches push more growth on that side. It's just a matter of relocating that energy to different spots.
Just make sure when you,
I get that.
Just make sure when you do your pruning that it's a nice dry day, and preferably several days in a row that are nice and dry. There is a bacterial disease that will go after pears called fire blight, and if you do that in wet weather, you're more likely to wind up with problems with that.
So that spray stuff doesn't work to keep the bears away? The stuff I use for the rabbits and deer?
I don't think it's going to have the same impact. No, they're a little bit more hardy.
Because that stuff works.
Oh,
the only
does.
Thing I learned, after the show 2 weeks ago, I said, when should I spray the roadies? And I went out and it was windy, and I was a town windy.
Gardner didn't want you back in the house.
Well, it repels family members.
Exactly.
I mean, that's another thing. Let's go to Newburgh. Glenn, you're on.
Howdy. Good afternoon, everybody.
You're
Can
on.
You hear me?
Yep. Yeah, go ahead. Yes.
Okay, good. Good, thanks. First of all, I'll tell somebody didn't know where Mount Jumper was. It's just a little bit northwest of Kingston. All right?
Okay, okay. Perfect.
Now, here's my question.
Yes.
That's correct. I have some bulbs. They were my wife's grandmother's tulip bulbs. And last year, I pulled them up after they were done flowering, and there was no more green. And I kept them downstairs in the cool, and I only had a chance to plant like a small handful of them. Have I lost the remainder of them, or should I plant them now?
If they're firm and they look as good as they did when you pulled them out of the ground, you could try to plant them now, but it is very late. We usually recommend fall planting.
Yes.
December is usually the last best month.
They develop their roots in the ground over the winter. So you've put them in the ground now. They may grow. They won't flower this year, I don't think. But, you got nothing to lose.
Okay. Yeah, it's worth a shot.
But they won't flower, but maybe they will flower next year.
Maybe. If they grow foliage, then you got them, and then they would definitely continue. So it's just a matter of plant them. It's worth a shot, and then hope for some foliage that would come up. As a result, it's showing us those bulbs are good.
Tulips don't come back year year as well as daffodils. They can, but sometimes you plant tulips, leave them in the ground, and they just don't do that well.
I think some of those newer cultivars, they don't respond as
older
well. Some of the older ones. My mom always had them come back pretty good, but it was older varieties.
Yep.
All right, Glenn, thanks a lot. Very quickly to David in Stockport. David, you're on.
Yes, so to answer your rhododendron problem. I had the same problem with mine on the north side of my house. Very windy, like 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was very windy in the wintertime. And this year was the same thing with all the wind. I looked it up and they said that basically the wind, it's not so much the cold, but it's the cold wind that dries out all the the buds and the stems.
Ah.
And I actually cut off a lot of it. But I'm not quite certain. I have the same thing this year, but I think you're supposed to leave it alone. Your plant's not dead.
No, ours actually, are coming back nicely,
No, we've been telling everybody, leave them alone and, give it time, and they'll come back. And it is a combination of cold and frozen ground and also wind. The wind desiccates them and dries them out.
Evergreens lose a lot more moisture during the winter because they have tissue, whereas a deciduous plant doesn't. So wind and sun's going to dry them out.
But generally they all do pretty well. So, again, just wait.
All right, this is from Kate. How long do raspberries produce? I've been pruning a patch that's 40 years old for the last few years. I've only had a few small berries. Is it time to get new ones, Dale Island?
They probably have virus infection by now. So if it's 40 years old and they're not producing very well, by all means, put some newer varieties in.
Okay. Any specific variety?
There's lots to choose from. Depends if she wants summer or fall bearers. I would talk to her local garden center and see what they've got, and get on the Cornell fruit website and see what they recommend for this area.
All right, listen, we're about out of time here, and I apologize. The phones are crazy today. We have had so many calls. There were so many people we didn't get to today, and so many emails. Let's see, 20-some-odd emails I didn't get to. So I apologize to everybody. The good news is this group will be back 2 weeks from today and 2 weeks after that and 2 weeks after that, all summer and early fall long. So if you didn't get through, many apologies. Hey, Bob Graves, how do people find out about Fatigans?
Fatigans, fatigans.com, or we are on the Troy Schenectady Road, 2.5 miles west of the Northway, very near the airport road.
Okay, and Greg Ward, Ward's Nursery.
Yeah, Ward's Nursery is in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, 600 South Main Street, wardsnursery.com.
And Dale Isla Riggs, the Berry Patch still closed, or are you opening up soon?
Berry Patch is closed right now. We're too busy planting, seeding, and transplanting away.
That's exciting.
People can find us at theberrypatch.net and ask us about our free choice farm share.
And Fred Breglia, how are things at the Landis? How do people find out?
It's 174 Lape Road in Esperance, New York, and our website's landisarboretum.org.
Well, splendid job, everybody. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Now it's time for me to stumble through some underwriting. Here we go. Let's see. Oh, this is a new one. Oh, we're all in trouble. All right, I'll sound it out. Support comes from Dwelleski's Tree Planting and Transplanting, NYSA ISA certified arborist for ornamentals and fruit tree pruning services serving Columbia and Dutchess counties and Capital District. DwelleskiTree.com. I hope I got that right, Dwelleski. Saratoga Jewish Community Arts Festival, presenting Hold Me, Heal Me, Two Faiths, One Love, April 6th at 2 p.m. and April 10th at 7 p.m. live on Zoom, saratogajewishartsfestival.org. Once again, thanks to Fred Breglia, Bob Graves, Greg Ward, and Dale Isla Riggs for being here. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Zach Malloy, a little cranky over there in Master Control, but you're doing all right, man. You got through it. Susie Checkeye screened the calls. Thank you, Susie. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on Food Friday, we welcome back grain fanatic, history buff, all-around wonderful person, Amy Halloran. We'll see you tomorrow at 2:00.